Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. Right, I thought I'd come into this week's episode riding high from a Chelsea win over the weekend, but unfortunately, we have been denied again. This time by Leicester City. Damn it, man. I hope Frank Lampard gets his first win as Chelsea coach soon so we can get this damn monkey off our backs. But I've been impressed by this Lamp's protege called Mason Mount. The kid has balls of steel. He reminds me of a young Lampard with a touch of Michael Ballack. Anyway, let me also touch into some local footy. The MTN 8 served up some Wafa Wafa magic over the weekend. Highlands Park beat Orlando Pirates 1-0 at Orlando Stadium to book their place in the last four. Sundowns came back from a goal down to Wallop Bloom Celtic 3-1 in Attridgeville. SuperSport United beat Vets 3-0 thanks to two goals from the King, Thamsanqa Ngagabuza, and a solitary strike by Bradley Grobler. And Polokwane City beat Cape Town City 2-0 in a match played at Newlands of all places. Strange that that happened, but we won't get into the politics. I will head straight to the upset of the week. Definitely goes to Highlands Park beating Orlando Pirates 1-0 at Orlando Stadium. The Buccaneers are definitely beleaguered at the moment, and they are without their head coach, Micho, who resigned just before the game, maybe 24 hours before they played that game. But the playmaker of the week goes to Smooth the Black Swan Nkosi for his dancing double against Argentina at Loftus on Saturday. I actually want you to hear Smooth Nkosi talk about the thought process that goes into beating multiple defenders to score a try. And he did that twice against Los Pumas in that 24-18 win on Saturday. This is the Black Swan talking about how all his senses are heightened at that critical moment.
I wish I could give you an answer to that question, but I don't know. I just went out on the pitch to try and do my job and obviously help the team towards the W. That was all that was on my mind, and we got the W, so I'm quite happy with that. Yeah, it's only fun when you win, to be honest. You can score five tries in a game, but at the end of the day, if your team loses, your contribution amounts to nothing. So yeah, it was fun because we won. Yeah, we're in a very good space. We're in a place where we've got lots of combinations, lots of different players, but we all have worked long enough with each other for us to understand each other, you know? And yeah, to answer that quite simply, I'd say, yeah, we are in a good space.
So could you tell us through the tries, just having defenders in front of you, especially the second one, where it seemed like the Argentinians had you covered, what goes through your mind at that time where you actually have the confidence to beat 3-4 guys?
I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm not thinking at that time. I'm not thinking. I'm just in the flow. My instinct takes over. And then I just do what my body feels like it must do. Yeah. I woke up after I scored the try. I realized that I just scored a try because I was just in that zone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just get tunnel vision.
I won't say it's tunnel vision, but it's like, it's, I don't know. Might sound a bit philosophical, but it's a state where all my senses are completely heightened, and then I just see everything happen in like slow motion, and then I just try to do what I do from there.
And Springbok fortunes have definitely transformed in the 18 months that Rassie Erasmus has been in charge of the team. And one man who has been there through the Alistair Coetzee horror show and is now with the Rassie Erasmus glamour show, it's none other than fly half Altin Yankees, and he told us all about what's changed in the setup since then.
I've just got a question for Altin. You've seen this team evolve from the previous 2 years under the previous regime to now. It seems like it's chalk and cheese. From your experience, what would you say have been the fundamental key changes that have taken pretty much a similar group of players play at this incredible level that
they're playing at? Yeah, I think this group has been together for maybe three or four years. It's actually the similar group, similar squad. I know we had different coaches, but we as individuals, we come a long way and we actually get along together. And It's a bunch of individuals that actually want to achieve something special, making sure that we actually get better as a group every single week. Now we just, for my personal feeling, we've got the right system from a defensive point of view, from a kicking game point of view, from a attacking point of view as well. So everybody is aligned in terms of that technical stuff. So it's just for you as an individual just to use your circus act in the system, and that's my personal feeling.
Do you understand your roles a lot better than you did maybe in the past?
Definitely. Definitely it makes a massive difference in terms of the knowledge Coach Rashi, Coach Jock and Coach Swayze assisted with. The amount of knowledge they have and the experience they have, and then obviously the group, it goes hand in hand. We've got our opinions and the coaches got their opinions, and then hopefully we get to one common goal and then we all align, and that is special just to see where everybody gives an input, and after that whole meeting you can see that everybody knows what to do on the field when we going out training, and then obviously on Saturday we're all well prepared and the bodies are fresh and we're all good to go and we're all on one page and we're all aligned to perform to get better every single week.
Guns, an essential tool in self-protection or a catalyst for criminality. CliffCentral.com presents Guncast, a podcast that unpacks the divisive issue of gun ownership in South Africa. Join legal expert Martin Hood as he hosts a series of talks with both sides of the gun lobby. Whether you support the right to carry guns or you believe they're a destructive tool that society could do without, Guncast will enlighten and challenge you in equal measure. Find Guncast now on the Cliff Central app, on CliffCentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And let's get to the special part of our episode. Last week, we released part one of the chat with former Lions lock MB Lusaseni, who retired from professional rugby at just the age of 26. He's now 30 years old. He told the tragic story of how he earned just 2,000 rand as a Sharks Academy product back in the mid-2000s, while some of his academy mates earned just 700 rand. Lots of people have been looking forward to part two of this candid conversation, so I will not keep you waiting much longer. If you want to catch up, please do go to timeslive.co.za and go to our podcast page to find part one of this episode. I've also been sharing it on my Twitter account. I'm at @Smu_Mjikeliso. But before we get into that chat with Mbube, a quick disclaimer. This interview was a telling of MB's own personal journey and not a dig at any of the organizations mentioned or the people, many of whom had particular jobs to do and some of whom are no longer even in the rugby picture. So I hope none of this is taken out of context. Secondly, please excuse the sound of drinks slurping in the background, ice getting crushed, stuff like that, and some chitter chatter from the patrons, motorbikes running up and down, someone with a fast car or a Lambo or a Bugatti, whatever it was, going up Florida Road. I had mentioned in the previous podcast that we were accommodated at a pub called House of Curries for the purposes of this interview, and it was the best possible setting because we were able to be candid and open and relaxed, having some pints with, you know, two guys that really, really love the game and chatting about the real issues in the game of rugby. But in spite of that slight background noise, it is an unbelievable conversation. So here is the second and final part of my chat with MB Mbube Lusaseni. Let's get into it.
So I was saying the nice thing about that time,
yeah,
was like as much as about this guy was, had his intimidating presence about him, you know, but at the same time, about you know certain situations, but at the same time, you know what, he ended up actually giving me better advice in terms of how to handle my career or in terms of how to just handle myself as a rugby player now, versus my agents or mentors back then that I didn't have. So it was one of those situations, man. I think the best advice he gave me, he was like, go home. Like, I remember my first year out of high school, that was probably my worst year ever in rugby.
In rugby.
Because everything was a shell shock. Yeah, boy. So I mean, like, we're from a place now where by Eastern Cape, let's get real, everything about rugby there is for fun. Yeah, boy. It's just for fun.
We love the game,
But we can't administer the game. We are poor. That's a sad reality.
So now the thing is, now you move from that type of a setup to now this setup whereby it's professional. From the get-go, everything is professional. So now in a position whereby you've never gymmed before in your life, now you have to go to gym like 4 times a week. Now you have to go to training, like into jalo, what type of thing. Like, you know, you have to be in a professional program. So hey, I struggled. You struggled
with the routine of the professional pressure.
The routine, just the change in itself, like the culture. I struggled completely because I think about, okay, you know what? I would literally just go to practice maybe 2 times a week.
Yeah.
For example, playing a album. 2 times a week, you play on a Saturday.
Saturday.
That's it. And you enjoy yourself.
You don't have to do any gym work. You don't nothing. Have to eat certain things.
So, practice, right. No protein shake or anything. You don't need to get bigger. Type of thing. So, I think that's one thing I struggled with, especially my first year. But the thing is now, in 2006, most I made SA schools just playing, just enjoying rugby.
Just natural, raw as hell.
That's
man.
It. Yeah. Made SA schools in the club. Now, when all of this professionalism started coming about and stuff, hey, I struggled, man. I struggled to such an extent that when I made Sharks under 19, I was bad. As in, I was playing absolute nonsense. I can even tell you that.
And, were you in the second row or back row?
I was second row, so I was playing lock.
Second row, yeah.
So I was playing lock at that time. I was absolute nonsense at that time. I even got dropped. The last few games, I got dropped. They're like, guy, listen, bro, you're not really working with us here. You look at your stats, look at this. Look at your stats, look at all of this nonsense type of thing. Like, it's just not making sense. Your KPIs are absolute nonsense. I got dropped nicely. So now when I got dropped there, I literally was struggling. But the thing is, I had a 2-year contract at the Sharks.
Yeah.
That was Stroud that day. I remember I went to Stroud. And I asked him, bro, this is the situation I'm in right now. I don't know how to handle this. I don't know what's up. So already the commercial manager that's looking after the juniors, he came at Melbourne, and really told me about, we had a meeting with him, and he told me about, listen, bro, if you're in a 1-year contract, yeah, we'll literally terminate him and be like, Sharps, crank out. But we have to deal with you because you're in a 2-year contract.
If you were in a 1-year, you would have been done.
I've been done. They would have told me to go out.
And we wouldn't even be having this conversation right now.
Who knows where I would be, boy, if I'd still be alive. Maybe a DJ. So it was one of those. Ustral literally told me, like, bro, listen, the problem with you is that you haven't realized that there's something called a balance that you need to get, especially within the sport.
Yeah.
Wati, you've been on rugby the whole year. You haven't even switched off once. Do yourself a favor. When you go home now in December, don't even think about rugby. Don't gym, don't touch do rugby balls, don't do anything.
Just chill. Yeah.
Do what you normally do or what you want to do. Just chill. Come back into January, we'll start all over again. You'll feel much better. I literally went home and I didn't even think about rugby. But the funny switch is that I actually started gymming. And I started actually
pumping weights,
just taking care of myself, in general.
But not with rugby in mind. Just doing it.
Yeah, just about, I'm bored. I want to actually, let me do something about this thing. I'm bored.
Looking in the mirror.
Clean. Pump my back corner. That's the line, type of thing. So it became one of those.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is that all of those actually added up and became a building block. Because now, when I came back the following year, Swayze was our coach that time. So when I came back the following year, this guy was like, dude, what did you do in December? Like, you look like a different person. You're agile, you're all over the place, you're good. You have a presence now on the field. Tell me, what did you do? And I'm like, guys, literally, I kid you not, I didn't do anything. I switched off, I went to sleep. That's all I did. So he's like, no, whatever you did, it actually worked for you. And I was really kicked out of the SA under 20 trials.
Really?
I was kicked out. I was told thanks. Like, grand. Like, so I wasn't even up for runnings then.
Yeah.
Kicked out completely. So now the nice thing about that is that we started having these academy tours that we were doing in the beginning of the year. And through those academy tours, and I was playing well. Like, I was getting man of the match awards and the whole works. And the nice thing is that Uswais now was in the selection committee of the SNI 20.
Okay.
The panel. So he was part of the selection team.
So he puts you in that conversation because he's seeing you.
He can see what's going on behind
the background. That helps.
Most definitely. But the nice thing is that, but the funny thing is that when it's close to our final round of trials, when it's close to our final round of trials, all the locks just were injured. All of them. There was probably like 2 guys left to play like 7 games, and they were all just injured. Yeah, boy. And the guy was like, hey, bro,
good
listen.
Fortune.
Yeah, come through, you know, come and play.
Yeah.
Type of thing. Play the shy man of the match. I played 2 matches, and then I ran the next one. The next one I played at 6. Played out of my boots. Next thing they're like, okay, sure, you made the shortlist, and you're going to the World Cup. Finished. Just like that.
Just like that.
I kid you not, just like that. So that's when I started counting my lucky stars, when I was like, you know what, dude?
Okay.
Apply, okay. Man.
Cool. I wanna head straight to your last year at the Lions, bro.
Oh.
I know there's a lot I'm skipping in between.
No, it's cool. It's cool.
China, you'll have to write a book to fill in the details, because that academy conversation was 30 minutes.
Oh, is it?
That on its own, like, kind of shows you the detail, and you haven't even scraped the surface.
Right, there's just so much.
You haven't
much.
Even scraped the surface. I still don't know who was the Bulls coach.
Mm.
But anyway.
Eric Soles.
Eric Soles.
Was the SN of 20 years, who was called. Yeah.
You know what he's doing now? Apparently
What's
he's
doing?
A substitute teacher now, bruh.
Oh,
yeah, he's not even in rugby, bruh.
Who are you?
I'd take it, bro. Eric Soles.
Eric Soles. That man will never forget that man.
Yeah, I know. Rugby deals with rugby deals with China. Yo.
I'll give him a pass. I'll give him a pass. Because there was isn't a 20.
Yeah.
I think that was probably the first time where I actually felt black.
Wow.
That's how deep it is.
You know, it's funny enough. Mm. The first time I ever felt black was at Pretoria Boys High School. For a long time I didn't F with Boys High, bro.
Just didn't make sense. I know,
like,
bro.
For a very long time. Mm. Yeah. Like, no. I just did not F with Boys High at all. Your last year, Lions. Then I'm talking Super Rugby now.
Yeah.
You're fit.
Yeah.
You are out for a while, you come back, it's a new season, you're fit.
Yeah.
Johan Ackermann
names
a team to tour overseas, excludes you in that team, names his son, Rowan Ackermann, in that touring squad. It was the first year the Sun Wolves were in, the Lions played their first game against Japan. I think, I'm not sure if they played in Singapore or in Japan, but that's moot.
Yeah.
And in China, things were not the same after that.
Things were not the same. Nah, true, man. Like,
am I correct in summing up?
No, you are correct on most of it, Jawana. But the thing is, from my side, ne, I think one thing that I underestimated was the the mental scarring of the injury in itself.
Yeah, but
it was an ankle injury, dislocated ankle. So it was my first serious injury, like ever. So even coming back was almost like it was probably the most difficult time of my rugby career, because there were mental, like, physically there were a lot of things I could handle because I had people that were assisting me. But mentally, bro, in terms of actually understanding what exactly it will take for me to get back to form or get back to a competitive state. I wasn't ready for that, you know, so to speak. And I think at that point in time, I didn't really have anybody to guide me along to actually say, but listen, bro, right now, understand that, yes, you're going to fight a very big uphill, but then this uphill of yours, you have to entertain it in a certain way. So it was almost as if when everything happened, I was basically looking at the sense of, listen, when I come back, everything must basically go back to the way it was when I'd left, So when I played, obviously, 2014, obviously, the Super Rugby, the whole season, and then the injury hit in 2014, Curry Cup. So I think at that point in time, I was really peaking. Proper rugby. I was really in a good space, good position.
And
I thought, you know what? I really had a good grasp of what is going on, how to actually become a professional and a good player. And, like, my sights were set on Springboks. I'll kid you not. They were set on Springboks. That year, I was like, either within this year or the next year, I'm going to make Springboks. Like, come hell high water. Because of the way I'm playing and how I've assessed how my competitors are doing at that point in time.
I think, to be fair, we, in the national conversation, we've got guys like Jandre, Krier.
Not that players,
Flip Van der Merwe, but we didn't know where we were going.
We didn't rate them. I'll put it out there.
I'll be honest, those days,
what was Jandre? It was Jandre, the Flip Van der Merwe.
There was another Bulls guy, man, with
he locked with Mostert also made it as well. Not Franco Mostert, the other Mostert was playing for the Sharks.
Yeah.
Very good guy. I love him to death. He also made it as well.
It was hard times. It was just, second row.
Yeah, second row. Like there's open gates for those guys who actually could actually establish
like
their name. So it was one of those.
And Fudge has got a story about Jadon.
Yeah, beyond.
When you drop that name, yo, Fudge turns red, bro.
This is a conversation we're having now. This is a conversation we had in December in East London. Hey, I think we were there for like 3 hours. We're just going on about these locks and what's going on.
You,
and,
no way is better than Jadon Creer. Come behind me and then starts at the balls. Rugby.
Yeah, man, Fudge.
And he goes on and
yeah. Oh, crap.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
no, bro. Like, so the thing is, okay, now.
Excited
one thing,
Springboks, you're feeling good, you're fit.
And the whole works. And nice thing, I think you need to take a step back quickly. Because the nice thing about the Lions at that point in time, let's say 2014, 2015 season, from my point of view, was, you know what? One thing I respected the coaches and everyone around, especially Yohan Ackermann, was that everything was transparent. Just transparent. As by you knew by listen bruh, we are all here in a situation whereby we all come from we are all literally thrown away by other unions. We're all rejects.
All of us.
Ron Combrink. Franco Mostert.
There was a tax team Courtney.
2011. Yeah, there was tax team at
Courtney's Sports. Tax team. Man is boss off.
That's the one I played in 2011.
Oh, you ended
the
team.
We got to the final. They won the following year. We got the final 2011.
We got to the final.
We lost to UCT against
Interpret.
Yes, and Interpret
kicked you guys.
Yes,
silly that
that's,
year.
That's the
I
one
remember.
We lost. The following year they won it.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So I was in that team as well. So literally now, when we all came back to the Lions, it was almost like we're coming back home because now. It's guys from Tuts and it's guys from the Sharks.
I remember looking at this team thinking,
and it was real. And I recall this one time, Warren Whiteley was obviously making a team speech before our captain's practice.
Yeah.
Before, I think it was the semi-final of the Currie Cup in 2015. And this guy said something that literally just stuck with us. No, 2014, the semi-finals, 2014.
You're playing the Sharks?
No, we're playing Lions. 2014 was Lions. That's when we got to the final of the Currie Cup and we lost.
No, I'm saying we're playing against the Sharks.
I think we're playing against the Sharks, yeah. I think 2014 Currie Cup
2014
final.
2014 Currie Cup, how did they
Western
say
Province,
crazy game,
Western Province, I think we're playing against Western Province.
Province.
At
you
Province.
Sharks in the final.
No, we're playing Province at Province, I think. The final. No, the semi was against Sharks. It was against
the semi
Sharks.
Was
yes.
Sharks.
Oh, we killed them. No, we killed
I don't remember.
Them.
Because they brought back all the Springboks or Bismarck.
Yes.
I remember because Howard
did the
a
most.
Crazy
did
game,
the
man. Ooh. I remember that 2014.
2014.
Cup. But continue.
Yeah. So now that 2014 Currie Cup, I recall because now I just been injured now, Ebon, so I'm already out. But there's something that Warren Whitey actually said there, and it stuck like properly. I think we actually played our final a game early because of that conversation.
You guys were pumped.
If he had said that in the final, trust me, it would have been a different ball game. This guy, like, he literally just went up. I think it was before captain's practice, and he was like, listen up, guys. You do understand. And he literally pinpointed each person. And it was like, you do understand that we all, at some point in time, were rejects from certain unions. Went to certain guys. You, what happened at Western Province Company?
Yo.
You, what happened at Blue Bulls? You, what happened at
And you have a combo one by one?
Live, because he knows the stories. You, what happened there? What happened there in the hallway?
No way, man. But so like, aren't you sheepish? I hope he doesn't.
No, the thing is, he'll go at you. But the funny thing, and even went to Lionel, what happened to Cheetahs, you know?
What happened? Lionel, what happened to Cheetahs? That's a minute sensitive.
Hey, listen, we all have stories to tell. So the funny thing is that when you did that, Jabon, literally, I think that's when everybody actually started becoming aware about, guys, as much as I probably thought that I was going to do the most, hey, someone get up and we've got something more to play for.
Man.
It's not just about, obviously, you playing for the badge or you playing for higher honors or whatever.
Yeah.
Dude, we're literally playing for each other right now.
Yeah.
We're playing for each other, put ourselves on a certain platform so that we can actually, you know, do the most.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. Bro, when the guys came out, that semi-final, I kid you not, they literally came out against Springboks. We were nobodies. There was not even a
Sharks Super Rugby team.
The only person who had even smelt Springboks to us at that point in time was Lionel, so to speak, and Elton Yankees, so to speak. Like, yeah, as in they smelted. Really. Yeah, but they were included in the setup, but weren't really, you know.
Yeah, I think Elton had made his debut, mm-hmm. made his debut 2012.
Yes.
But he came on second half.
Yeah, but so it wasn't like that. Like,
it was an awkward, yeah. It was the most awkward debut.
Mm, most definitely.
And Elton had actually had that shit year at 2013 at Stormers.
Yeah.
That's that year was a waste for Elton.
Yeah, bro. So,
like, you take peak Elton, but Alistair, we'll confront Alistair one day.
One day. He's getting close to the, what did you do? When I come out with this nonsense.
Take peak Elton, and then, like, you just reduce it.
If we have to go the political route, we'll take a certain party. I'm not going to mention it. CJ, because I'm not what? So anyways.
Cool.
So it became a situation. Like, I kid you not, after that team talk, there's almost like this sort of like little him buzz.
Yeah,
on the camp, but guys, you know what? At the end of the day, we've got absolutely nothing to lose. And I kid you not, I can easily say that it was literally from that day whereby that same mentality, the same attitude carried on throughout 2015,
yeah.
throughout 2016, where now these guys were like, guys, we literally have nothing to lose. We're not.
You're the guys that were counted out.
Yeah, the guys were like.
You were still those guys.
All of the players, let's get real. Like, who would actually even give us a shot at winning any game in Super Rugby? But now the thing is, we won 7 in our first year coming back in Super Rugby. And guys are like, I would do it. Like,
if we win 7, you know, win 9.
Yeah, like, as well.
You can win 10. Yeah,
but the thing is, now all the other games we played against, they went hard. It was like small little margins.
Yeah.
You know, a kick here or whatever. Like, but we were basically in the game the whole time. So now we actually.
It must have been amazing, man, to actually witness firsthand that we can actually do it.
Exactly. I think that's when the belief actually started coming through. But guys, we can actually. Like, there's nothing actually stopping us from doing this.
Yeah.
Physically, we're beyond these guys. We are fitter than these guys. But the funny thing is that it's almost like a mental switch now that we have to actually entertain.
That's
where the mental switch came in. Semi-final, we came through, did the most. That one. Blew the guys off the park. I think it was almost like a 40-point game. I don't know. There's a huge score. A huge margin.
Yeah, it was huge. It was 42 something.
It was a huge margin. Yeah, but against the Sharks that time.
China. I remember this game completely. I remember writing about how Howard misses.
Mm.
And I get a complex as a writer.
That guy. Yesterday.
I get a complex about certain guys. Mm. I had a complex about Pat Lamby.
Yep.
I just love studying Pat.
Yeah.
Like, I just.
You love Pat, all right?
I love Pat, Chad. I love Pat. Like, everybody knows. Like anytime he used to say, not another fucking Pat Lamby story. Like, I was working here in Durban, writing for Sunday Times, and he would say, and there's a mate of mine, Matthew Savini, and he's just here just grabbing a drink.
Okay.
And I would get grief. Because I would have to submit a Sunday Times diary. Like, so you have, what's your big story of the week?
Mm.
China, Pat is in there somewhere.
Pat is always there. Somehow, he finds his way.
Pat would always be there. And I would hammer that Pat is a 10. And I had a certain thing about Howard as well. And I used to say that he's not your archetypal Springbok 12. Because we are, our culture is
12 takes up straight.
Yeah.
Sets up, does the most.
So you're Valent, Elifier, Olivier, Tivet Barry, Damien Dialande.
Roy Nyanser for Resburg.
We don't have
same WhatsApp group. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I like Roy. By the way, I thought if Nani Laumape can make All Blacks, then Roy Nyanser for Resburg.
No, trust me, he was an onset at some point in time for
it's
an
a like
issue
for
that
like.
We had.
Yeah, so it's a like for like, but that's just another conversation altogether. There've been so many Howard Lionel Mapo, but Lionel when he made his Springbok debut.
Mm.
Under Alistair, probably should have played more games. He owed a shitload of beers to Howard. Mm-hmm. A shitload of beers to Howard.
Howard put him on there. He put him in that situation.
A load of beers to Howard.
I can even go as far as to say, you know what? Even Elton, when he had his comeback, you know what, dude, you're actually a solid number 10.
Yeah.
So now, to me, it felt as if everybody now started actually accepting him as being that flyer who actually plays up in your face, so he plays in an advantage line. And the thing is now, he had people around you to compliment him and do that. I don't think that's something that he had when he was at Province. That's the difference. So when he was at Province, he still wanted to play that flat line, but he couldn't.
Nobody else
didn't have anybody else to almost help him out in terms of his game plan. So that's why he almost looked a bit of like, way out of Province. But when he came back to Lions, and the nice thing is that he had people to compliment him around the way he plays.
Some of the best complimentary players you will ever find. Mm.
That combo of Howard and that combo of Elton, Howard and Lionel.
And Lionel.
That was probably the biggest difference in Lions rugby. It was the biggest difference ever. But yeah, let's get real. I mean, like, each their own. Coaches have got their preferences for whatever.
And I said that he'll never get picked for Bucks. I said in the piece that He will never get picked.
Not even considered, bro.
He'll never be in the conversation for boxing.
Which box coach wants a dancing 12?
No, none, man.
But the thing is that dancing 12 makes meters and always basically does the most.
And I'm going to start this hashtag post-2019 World Cup.
Yeah.
Damian Williams at 12. But I don't want to get technical. But
okay, Damian I hear you.
For me.
I hear you.
Because you've got Manny Lee Bokten. Pollard's only 25 years old.
He'll be there for the next couple of years.
Elton's just signed a 2-year contract with the Lions, which is good for consistency. You still need your...
So he'll still be around for a while?
He'll still be around. Yeah. Elton's still Elton at the end of the day.
So now, what do you think about the combination of Pollard-Elton? Has that sparked certain things, or has that been like, you know what, it can work, but only for certain games or
certain
only...
Certain period.
Oh, okay.
It's not... It makes it,
Something that we can bank on for the long run.
For a certain period, it can work. Pollard can work as a 12. And I think his future should be a 12. Right? But now you're talking about giving a young guy game time at a high level. Right? So let's say if Pollard was starting 10.
Who would you play at 12?
Pollard's only 25. Who are you going to play at 12,
So you think if Damian Williams would
be Damian, in absence of Damian, Pollard then becomes the auxiliary 12.
Yeah.
That plays 10. Like Dan Carter.
Could also play 12 as well at stages.
And Oblet. Yeah. Like, it's a simple matter of he plays 10. He can play 10 all year, bruh. And then he just moves to 12.
But do you think now, let's say for example, as you're saying now, the All Blacks, do you think what they were looking for at that point in time, now we're almost getting it right now? As to Dan Carter Utawachal 12, like back then, you know, so to speak.
Obviously
they had a certain mindset around a 10 being a 12.
Yeah.
But rather being the conventional route of 12 being the pressure, ball carrier.
I think it was also on a needs basis. Because at that time, remember, Nonu was a 13.
Yeah.
They didn't see Nonu as a 12.
Yeah, at that point in time,
At that point in time. And I think they had Tana Umanga who was retiring. So it was a matter of, who do we have? Like, when you lose Aaron Major, Tana Umanga,
that's what I was going to say.
You're
also trying to work things around within the camp in itself.
Yeah, it happens with some positions, you just dry out.
Makes sense.
You just dry out and then you've got your 12, which would be a normal 12, but you're not getting maximum dollar value.
That's true.
For me, I'm not thinking a 12 that can play. I'm thinking a 12 that can make an impactful contribution. If you want a 12, Jana, go with Damien. If you want a straight up and down 12, go with Damien, go with Andreas.
The usuals.
Keep me out of it.
Yeah.
Keep me out of it.
But if you want a playmaker as well as 12.
But if you want to play and play through your 10 and 12, like what we were talking about.
Howard.
Elton, Howard, and Lionel. And you got, look at your arm, Jana. You still got Jesse Creel.
Right.
So these are ball players. Maybe not much with his hands, but his athleticism is good.
I think all these guys, like, they're all X factors, basically, in their position. But as much as you can think about, you've got them covered, there's always that X factor that they can actually bring out. And, you know,
exactly.
So it's like they have more armory, okay, more arsenals in their game. Versus, like, a lot of guys that you have now, man. Like, about 12 Makoyo Ngogu, like, for example, I remember I was having a conversation with Howard
earlier on,
and we spoke about Ron Jansen for Rensburg. This is a time, it was rough then. This is a time when, obviously, it was still that, you know, little up and down situation. And I remember the coach at that point in time, Swayze, obviously was saying about, listen, guys, we're doing this whole rotational policy. Hated that thing. We're doing this rotational policy type of thing.
Yeah.
But the only person who got rotated was Howard. And he got rotated and he never got rotated back. And you're like, oh, Fitz, you're like, what kind?
He got rotated out.
Exactly. And the thing is now, the thing is now, you start asking yourself about, okay, listen, what exactly is it about this whole rotational policy, so to speak, you know? But that's something that obviously the Lions did well and they handled well and they actually, they hid behind it, you know? But for players' management, but guys, it's a rotation, I can't ging us, so there's not going to be a huge uproar when you find yourself on the bench or out the team. Yeah, but... But it became a situation now whereby it's like, but now you've been rotated out on the bench. But the thing is, you're not going back in now. So what's going on? Is it a case now they're going to say, oh, listen, we've given you a chance and you didn't prove us right. Now the rotation is stopped. Okay, when's it going to land? That's exactly what happened with the youngster, Urwan Akerman. let's say Akis Bob.
Oh, right.
So personally, I don't have an issue with him personally because we weren't playing the same position, everyone. So yeah. Now I was playing a lock at that time, but he was going out for flank. The only issue that we had in the camp was the mere fact that, no, bro, like, you know what, we respect you as a player, you're a good player, make no mistake.
Yeah.
But the sad reality is that there are other players here who are much better than you and can offer more than what you can offer.
Yeah.
So what you put,
bro,
dude, he was nowhere. But the thing is now, let's get real, you can take any player and put them in that team with those other people around him. You put him in a team with Jakob Hill, Warren Checklenburg. Exactly, easily. The starting players there would easily win any Super Rugby final. So let's say, for example, at that point in time, you had Warren Checklenburg, you had Jakob Hill, you had Warren Whiteley.
Yeah.
You had, this Franco Mostert there at lock. So, bro, let's get real. This is a proper back five. This is a springboard back five. So now, the thing is, put anybody there. Even if it's Mickey Mouse.
Nice guy called Lawrence.
Lawrence Adrianza. Beautiful player. Amazing player.
Nice.
Love that kid.
He's nice.
Love that kid. Very agile. A new dimension of locks.
Almost non-South African.
Next level. So now the thing is, you've got those players there who can make anybody look good.
Yeah.
But the sad reality is that you have other players around, Yabona, who are literally equal, who literally need that, or basically are actually above that kid who's getting involved. Let's get real, we'll never know what the coach's selection criteria are, so they say. But at the same time, you're like, dude, let's get real. We could actually see it as players, but this kid is way out of his depth. But the thing is now, he's going to get put in the deep water, and he's going to learn how to swim, but at someone else's cost. Someone else has been there working.
At the expense of someone else.
For example, a kid like Fabian Boyson.
Fabian Boyson. What happened to Fabian Boyson?
That's what happened to Fabian Boyson.
Fabian Boyson was in the SA
under-20 team.
To win the World Cup.
He was there.
The last one. Kaya Machon. Where's Kaya now, bruh?
Kaya has gone overseas now. He was here in Durban. He just left now.
Get out of here, bruh. I spoke to Warren Whiteley and I was saying Kaya Machon is playing club rugby in Durban.
Yeah.
How's that happen, bruh?
It's
Fontaine, Peter Steph Tutoi, Andre Pollard, Raymond Rule.
That year.
Who else?
There's actually a lot of guys that year.
Who else can
I? Marvin Ori wasn't that year, right?
Marvin Ori.
There's actually a lot of guys that year.
Kayama Jola was starting every game, bro, as a 7.
Mm.
And that team was coached by Brendan Fenter.
Yeah.
And I think Brendan Fenter knows his rugby.
No, beyond. How come
Kayama Jola was playing club rugby, bro?
I think Kai and I, in his situation, I think he got injured at Kings. He was at Kings, most Kai.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Because there's a stage whereby here at the Sharks, obviously, there was a when SA Rugby was flooded. But look at it this way. I think there's a stage whereby here at the Sharks, and actually in SA Rugby in general, there was a huge, basically needs to mind these words. Everyone, there was just all over the place, everyone. So,
Kayama playing club rugby.
No, he did well. The thing is, Ukaya only went to Kings, ne? Went to Kings, and then he got an injury, Payan.
Oh.
So now, through his injury, then they were like, hey, bro, we're not going to really support you. That's when the Kings were going to their shit. Vela. So now, obviously, to get back into the system so he can actually play. So he came back to the Gold Cup to play here for
the Sharks. You can't get into the Sharks team.
No. I won't lie to you, bro. That's what I'm saying, bro. Loose forwards, we're not short of loose forwards in South Africa. That's one thing.
Okay,
we're not.
I get it.
Yeah,
but are you telling me Kayama Jola cannot make?
I have to be fair.
A professional senior team.
But the thing is, you have to judge him from the way that he's playing right now. Like, as I'm saying, but I have to be fair on this. He's a good guy and everything, but you have to judge the way that he's playing right now. Yeah, Bon. As well, is he good enough?
I obviously didn't see him play.
To coach in Gold Cup, yeah. So he's
good. You were captain and coach during the
World Cup. Yeah, they're at Rovers. So now you have to ask yourself, College Rovers. So now you have to ask yourself, you have to be fair, you know, you have to be seriously fair.
No.
But the players that you have right now,
no.
Is he better? Yeah, but so he's coming back from an injury, so he was still trying to get his confidence back in the whole work. So I think now with the aid of the Gold Cup and the way that he played there, the opportunity arose and it came about. But listen, here's an opportunity overseas. I don't know what the club is, man. I don't know. I think it's France. It's in France, though, somewhere. Yeah, it's in France somewhere.
France, first division, second division, is decent. I remember one Elam Chekevu was at
Pep. Hey, yeah, in the most up well, yeah. And Mars, wasn't he still there?
It was second division. I don't know. I'd love to catch up with one day.
No, you must do the most.
I know, he's a maverick.
That man's got stories to tell for days.
For
days. That's another story to tell. Actually, the funny thing is that there's a certain story around him, but that's his story. It's not mine. That is his story. I remind you, but it's one of those, man.
Okay, just to wrap it up, Flip, I feel like we haven't even...
One bit.
I feel like it's surreal because we've been talking for so long, but I've left so much on the table. Like, I feel like, we can, like...
We need a 20-hour.
Yeah, we need a Netflix special.
Clean. Like, for this, trust me. Like, and I'm willing to put myself on the line and be like, listen, yes, it is.
A Netflix special. So I'm calling out Netflix now to say we need a special.
It's real, bro. It's real out here. I think there's so much that actually we have left behind. But obviously because of time, I understand. But at the end of the day, I think I'm still for that whole notion of we need to hear from somebody regarding an uncensored version of what exactly is going on here, bro.
In rugby.
What's going on, bro? Like, exactly, you know, from a player's perspective, from a coach's perspective.
Are you coaching at Hilton?
No, I'm coaching Glenwood. So I'm coaching three places. So the school I'm coaching is Glenwood. I'm coaching the Sharks Academy.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm a forward specialist in the Sharks Academy. I help out, obviously, with the let's say, Super Sport Challenge or with the age group as well. I help out with them if need be. And also almost like a player coach there at Rovers as well. Hey, but let's get real. I love it. Like, the thing is, I think now I'm actually loving my rugby more now than I was when I left it as the Lions or whatever, because now I'm actually gone back.
I'm so shocked
to
see that you're playing.
How
old are you? 32 years old?
I'm 30.
No ways,
bro. I'm only 30. I retired when I was 27. That's when I retired.
Get out of here, bro.
Now you gotta ask yourself about what exactly happened in order for a guy to retire 26.
Get out of here, bro.
And to really say, I've literally hanged my boots.
Get out of here. Like, I was chatting to a cricketer called Jerry Nkolo, batsman who retired from Warriors and water cricket to 27.
Yeah. But maybe he's got a different story. But to me, I retired not because I couldn't play. That's one thing I knew I could play. But because of everything that was happening around, I was like, I don't want to get myself involved here as a rugby player.
No, get out of here, bro. No way, bro.
That is why I came back to coaching, because at least now in coaching, you're a direct hand and influence as to what exactly needs to happen regarding certain people's careers, regarding the well-being of certain players. So that's why for me, it's more important now to have a coach who's more of a mentor than to be a coach who's just going to give you game plans and be like, just go and do whatever it is out there, you know, type of thing.
That's it from me, Sboom Jikeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the multimedia live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Ninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manike. From us at the Sports Live podcast, it's goodbye for now.